Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And joining me now, he's a CBS writer. He does college football and college basketball for them. He's on X at David W. Cobb. He is David Cobb. David, what's happening, man? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing okay, Gabe. I'm on the recovery from my NCAA tournament postseason basketball travel grind. I'm not at the Final Four this week, but that's okay. I was at the tournament the first 2 weeks, first in Memphis and then in Detroit. So just enjoying a little bit of time, not living out of a suitcase.
And no NIT championship game tonight with Indiana State and Seton Hall.
Low-key good matchup.
Low-key. No
real low-key, like real low-key. But I might actually watch it, which makes it a higher-key matchup than most NIT finals.
The NIT, it's just crazy how far it's fallen, right? I mean, it's absolutely insane. We used to play these games at Madison Square Garden, and now is it Hinkle? They play the Final Four for it at Hinkle.
That's better than doing it in like Dallas or Vegas or something, because there's some history there. And now you got Indiana State there tonight, so like you know they're going to
bet
because that's it. Actually, means something to them. They're a mid-major team. They got snubbed, and now they got a chance to hang a banner, right? So it means something to them. That's why there's intrigue in it. It's like, you know, if you're looking for the power conference teams to care about the NIT, they're never going to. The power conference teams are never going to care about anything other than the NCAA tournament or whatever mechanism we use to decide a national champion in the future.
Yeah, for sure. But I can't wait to see Robbie Avila tonight. That's the big one.
True.
Yeah, it is a shame. It is a shame that we left him out and DJ Burns had to take his spot. DJ Burns had to step up and be that guy for us, the fat athlete.
Wow. That is deep, man. I didn't even think about that. But, DJ Burns, because NC State won. Think about it. NC State may have literally stolen Indiana State's place in the bracket.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
If they don't win five games in 5 days, we might be watching Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Larry Nerd.
In the Final Four.
Larry Nerd. Exactly. Well, I don't know about Final Four, but, you know. I mean, if NC State could do it, maybe they could have done it. Who knows?
I mean, the Sycamores are legit, man. You know, don't sleep on ISU. Now, of course, the big question is, like, where's their coach going to go? Like, Josh Schertz, now he's made a name for himself at Indiana State. And it's the same deal like last year when Grant McCaslin was coaching North Texas in the NIT title game. The whole subplot was like, okay, this is great, very exciting. But where are you going to be coaching next year?
Right, exactly.
And that's sort of a situation there with Indiana State.
All right, now I want to start. We'll get to PJ Haggerty in a second because I know a lot of people, you know, in this market want to hear your thoughts because I know you ranked him and you've moved him up your rankings pretty substantially at 30 spots, I believe you moved him up. But we'll get to that in a second. Eric Musselman to USC. I didn't quite expect him to be on the move this offseason. I thought Louisville could be an option for him. But the more you look into it, he's moving back out to the West Coast. He coached out there in the NBA. He went to play college basketball at San Diego. And this is a good fit for him, ultimately. And I see some Arkansas fans trying to discuss the money aspect of this. This was not for money, was it?
No, I don't think so. This is a coach in Eric Musselman who's never stayed anywhere more than just a few years. And the bottom really fell out at Arkansas this past year to a degree that he was going to have a little bit of pressure, I think, going into the 24-25 season with how poorly things went this past year. If he misses the NCAA tournament again, then all of a sudden he's on the hot seat, which is crazy for a coach who's been to an Elite Eight and two Sweet 16s, but those are the expectations at a place like Arkansas. And he did a good job of meeting them out of the gate, but I don't blame him for seeking a fresh start. I mean, it was obvious all year long, just sort of how far off the rails things had gotten in Fayetteville. Now he goes to a place like USC that has, one, it's more in his geographic comfort zone as a SoCal guy, spent a lot of his life out that way. And then two, he gets to reset the clock at a place with lower expectations. You go to USC, they're just happy to make the NCAA tournament. And then, you know, they'll wake up in March or Selection Sunday, and their fan base will be like, oh, yeah, we have a basketball team.
Right.
You know, and he can make that Big Ten money out there as well. So I'm not actually shocked by this. And I said all along, I thought this was going to be the year where one of these sort of big-name SEC jobs would open. And I didn't know if it would be Nate Oates at Alabama or Bruce Pearl or Musselman. It ends up being Musselman. And, yeah, he's headed out west. It should be interesting because that job's only going to get harder at USC with the Trojans going into the Big Ten.
Yeah, and Arkansas is a great job. Where do you rank it nationally? Is it a top 20 job? Is it a top 20 job? I mean, how high could you put that Arkansas job? I mean, you have a rabid fan base. I mean, your home court advantage is phenomenal. And Eric Musselman, like, they showed that they will pay the hell out of you if you show progress. I mean, he made about a little more than $4 million a year, which I think was 12th nationally going into this year.
Yeah, at Arkansas, the job is as good as you believe it is. And, you know, yeah, I think you could definitely make the case that it's a top 20 job. Maybe some people look at Arkansas and see a remote and rural outpost in a difficult league and don't view it like that. But an enterprising coach, an ambitious coach, looks at it and sees the things that you described, which is a school with a major commitment to basketball, crazy home court advantage, a lot of pretty good history, and a recent track record of success. And you stack those factors together, the right coach will jump. So I think that they could go after some decently big fish in this coaching search.
Now, those big fish, I think there's three names that are surfacing. And you're probably hearing the exact same names. Chris Beard, Will Wade, Jerome Tang. Of those three, who should they take the biggest run at?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go after Will Wade. I think he's going to be a big-time winner in college basketball for two or three more decades. I mean, he's still a young coach. He's won everywhere he's been. And the heinous crimes he was once accused of
right.
will only grow more obsolete as the pay-for-play era takes hold in college sports. So if you're worried about the reputation stuff, I wouldn't be, because I think over time all that stuff's going to smooth out and we're not going to look at Will Wade as that big-time villain anymore. So I think Will Wade's the move there. Another one I'd be interested to sort of reach out to and see if he might be interested is T.J. Otzelberger.
Yep.
You know, he's kind of done some big work at a mid-America type of school there and in a similar state that supports its colleges at a high level. And, you know, the SEC money, maybe that could be a little greater than the Big 12 money. I bet the Razorback Collective is able to outpace what the Cyclones can do in that way. So that'd be an interesting one. If we're going to talk about a Big 12 coach and Jerome Tang, maybe talk about T.J. Otzelberger too.
Right. Now, those three names I brought up, Chris Beard, Will Wade, and Jerome Tang, it's kind of strange because I think the best coach has the worst reputation in Chris Beard. The second best coach has the second worst reputation with Will Wade. And then Jerome Tang's really, he's squeaky clean, but he had the one run there with Keontae Johnson and those guys getting to the Elite Eight, and then this year was kind of a fall off.
Yeah, Jerome Tang wouldn't be a bad hire, but he's the least proven head coach of those three. I think Arkansas fans could get themselves excited about that and probably should. He was phenomenal in year one, had Kansas State on the doorstep of the Final Four. They took a little bit of a step back this year, but look, I mean, they lost Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson, so you're just going to swing and miss sometimes in the transfer portal. And the bottom didn't all the way fall out either, so when I look at Jerome Tang, though, I just think about loyalty and the fact that this man was at Baylor as an assistant for two decades.
Yep.
And before that, he was a high school coach for quite a while. And so I don't know that I look at Jerome Tang and see somebody who goes from job to job. And is Arkansas a big enough of a step up for him to leave Kansas State in a conference in the Big 12 that he's really, really familiar with? That would be my question on Jerome Tang. But certainly an interesting name to have there in the mix at Arkansas.
All right, PJ Haggerty commits to Memphis. Let's go portaling. This was a good get for Penny. There's no doubt about it. Going to play point guard, average 21 points per game, 5 rebounds, right around 4 assists, and he's got 3 years of eligibility, and I think that's one of the main things that makes him so attractive to Memphis fans at this particular moment. And he played in the AAC, and I think there's some crossover there. People liked their time with Kendrick Davis for that 1 year, and he was at SMU playing against Memphis for all those years. I think that there's something similar there with P.J. Haggerty. But you you had him ranked, I think, at like 47 in your original transfer portal rankings. He boosted up pretty substantially. I think he's 17 now. Why'd you boost him up so much? And also, what do you think about Penny getting him to commit to Memphis?
Yeah, no, part of the reason I boosted him so high is because of the eligibility factor. When a guy hits the portal, I sort of run some numbers, you know, just look at it from a productivity standpoint, try to get him in there. This thing is evolving and moving every single day. And then, you know, once you have the chance to sort of look at a few minutes of a guy's tape, dig in a little deeper on sort of, you know, their eligibility, what the future could look like, what they could still add to their game, you know, then you start to move them around a little bit. And for me, with PJ Haggerty, he's got 3 years of eligibility remaining, and he's still got the ability to add the outside shot to
right.
his arsenal. This is a dude who scores for a relatively small guard, a massive percentage of his points in the paint or at the rim or as a pick-and-roll ball handler attacking the hoop. And very, very little three-point shooting in his game as a freshman at Tulsa. And if you think about, you know, the potential to add that to your arsenal, yeah, now all of a sudden we're talking about this guy being Kendrick Davis. I mean, it would be pretty phenomenal if he were able to add that outside shot. So you think about the potential for development there with a young player who's already been really productive. And to me, I was just like, oh, I need to move him higher. And I moved him before Memphis landed the commitment. So it wasn't a reaction to his commitment in any way. It was really just a feeling on my part that he needed to be higher.
It's kind of funny. He did shoot, what, 29% from three, but he put up a lot. I mean, it's not like he was scared to put up threes.
Yeah, but when I look at PJ Haggerty, I don't see that as his strength.
I see his
strength being somebody who attacks the basket. And so, you know, if you are looking at him to come in and make a ton of threes, that's, I don't think, what he's going to be next year. Now, could he add that to his game and become a better three-point shooter? Sure. But I think what this does for Penny is it sort of brings into focus what you need to do from here. You got your anchor first,
yep.
And I think that's smart because then you can add around him strategically. And when you look at the way Haggerty plays, what you need to add around him is shooting. You need to add those three-point shooters around him so that the floor stays spaced when he's attacking the basket. Because if all you got around him is a bunch of other 27% three-point shooters, well, the paint's going to be packed when Haggerty gets in there. So I think this is smart. You get your anchor of the transfer class first, and then you can sort of add around PJ Haggerty based off of the way he plays.
And also based on what I saw of him in the Memphis game, he's got a little bit of defensive upside too to go with Penny's culture, the defensive mindset that he's trying to build, right? I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged almost two steals a game, so he can play good on-the-ball defense. I mean, I'm never going to really think of an undersized, ball-dominant guard as being a lockdown.
Yeah, of course.
But, I mean,
you just need him to try on that end. I mean, Kendrick Davis was a guy who worked his ass off on that end, but he honestly didn't have the same height and length as P.J. Haggerty. He was 5'10".
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you got to remember, too, is like P.J. Haggerty started out at TCU, and so this was a high major prospect all along, and he kind of just needed that place where he could go and shine and show what he could do, and now that he's had that, he's got a chance to go on, and you know, TCU is a program where you spend a little bit of time there, you learn a lot about defense as well, because Jamie Dixon, I mean, he has some dogs on that team defensively who I'm sure PJ Haggerty went up against in practice. You know, Micah Peavy's comes to mind as somebody who I have ranked in this portal cycle, and who knows? Maybe a PJ Haggerty goes out and recruits somebody like a Micah Peavy who can play some perimeter defense for you at 6'7" or so. But it's a huge pickup from Memphis. It's a good start, but obviously they've got a long, long way to go still in this transfer cycle.
Talking with David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X. Now, one of the other guys they've been tied to pretty substantially because he took a visit is Dane Danger from Illinois. And he took a step back last year because I think Coleman Hawkins was a guy that they had that they wanted to stretch out to the three-point line, spread the floor, and that's why their offense was a lot better this year. Does the Dane Danger thing make sense at all? Because I just look at his height, his weight, the style of ball he plays, and it just doesn't make sense in a Penny Hardaway system, although it looks like they're going after him pretty hard.
No, I agree with you. And if they get him, they need to be willing to tailor the way they play to suit his style.
Right.
In a way that they maybe weren't willing to do with Jordan Brown because Dane Danger is a really, really effective interior scorer. He's a big, big dude, somebody who you could see, let's say, hypothetically, if he committed to Memphis and he and P.J. Haggerty are playing in the pick and roll, that and you got some shooters around those two, then that's a pretty dynamic offense because, you know, you got to defend P.J. Haggerty coming off that screen, and then Danger rolls to the basket. He can be a lob threat or you can dish it to him. And then he can score there at the rim. So I really like Dane Danger. I have him ranked as well. But I think you're going to look at his numbers and be like, wait, why are we talking about this guy's top 50 transfer? And the reality is he was just in a really bad system at Illinois for the way he plays. And as you mentioned, they emphasized Coleman Hawkins at the five, and he's more of a stretch power forward. And Illinois played that five-out style, which just isn't conducive for a traditional big man. So, I think Dane Danger would be a great pickup, but you have to be willing to mold your style to the types of talent that you land. And so I hope Dane Danger is kind of looking and asking some hard questions about Memphis and the way they would play and not just focusing on that bag, because he's going to have a lot of interest and a lot of offers, but he needs to go somewhere where he can really flex and show what he can do.
All right, now Final Four is set. NC State, Purdue, Alabama, UConn. Do you see either of these games going in the direction of the lower seed?
Not really, actually.
Not at all, right? it's a combined, 20? They're combined 20-point favorites? I mean, UConn's an 11.5-point favorite against Bama, who's been really good in this tournament, and Mark Sears has been great. And then Purdue, 8.5 over NC State.
Right, I would give NC State a better chance than I would Alabama, because NC State isn't going up against just some crazy uber talented machine here. Like Purdue has Zach Edey, the best player in college basketball, but on the whole, they're not nearly as talented as UConn is. And so, if there's one of Purdue or UConn who's somewhat susceptible, it would be Purdue in my eyes. But I still think Purdue wins and covers just because of. I mean,
I don't like that. I'll say this. I love DJ Burns to death. I really do. He's so fun to watch. I've been talking about his NFL prospects and everything else, and apparently there's some NFL GMs looking at him, so I got vindicated in that regard. But I do not in the slightest like a matchup against Zach Edey for him. I do not like it.
He's going to exert so much energy defensively trying to contain Zach Edey, and then he's got a 7-inch height differential on the offensive end to try to shoot over Zach Edey. And to me, I don't see that going particularly well. So if NC State can throw some of their other bigs at Zach Edey and sort of let DJ Burns rest a little bit defensively, then maybe Burns can get his 20 or more offensively. But tough matchup for NC State, tough matchup for anybody.
Yeah. I mean, if they throw him out there and give him one-on-ones on the defensive end, trying to cover Zach Edey, he might foul out in the first 5 minutes. I'm going to be completely honest. Based on the whistle we saw in that Tennessee game, I would imagine DJ Burns would pick up a few really early.
Yeah, guarding Zach Edey is really difficult. I think Donovan Klingon at UConn might be able to do it, but few others can. Which, oh, by the way, so you were in on the front end of the whole DJ Burns football hype, huh?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I saw him in the ACC tournament. And I started watching him, and I couldn't stop watching him. I watched every single game NC State played, and I just couldn't get over it. What's funny to me, though, David, have you seen his list weight, what they list him at?
What is he at, 270,
they
275?
They say 6'9", 275. There's no there is no world that guy's 275. I'm sorry. And I think they said something. I saw somebody out there sort of report he's probably closer to 6'7", 6'7 and a half, even with that. He's 330. Easy. He's got to be right around there. I've seen guys that are built like him. They are not 275.
So he is built like an offensive tackle, but, man, he's insisting he wants to play basketball. Now, he can make some money playing overseas. He doesn't have an NBA game, but, like, if he wants to play basketball and make money doing it, he definitely could, but the NFL money is a whole lot better than the European basketball money.
Yeah, and we just watched Jordan Mailata today for the Eagles, who was a rugby player who had to transition into football, 3-4 years ago. We just saw him get paid. He got, $66 million over 3 years? I think the fourth highest paid tackle. We've seen it before. We've seen guys who are not familiar with the game of football learn it pretty quickly. And with his arm length and his size, I could see it going fine. You just give him like a summer or a year to prep and to train. I could see it working out. I really could.
Yeah, he's shooting it down right now, and like I think he's getting annoyed with all the questions about it out there at the Final Four. But he might change his mind once he starts crunching the numbers after this NCAA tournament run.
All right, now on to a little bit of Memphis football. Ryan Silverfield got the extension, $12.25 million over 5 years. And then there's a couple of interesting clauses in there. If he wins 9 games, he'll get an $100,000 raise plus a year added to his contract on the extension. If he wins 10 games, he gets $250,000 worth of a raise, and he gets 2 years added to his extension. I think that 10-game clause, though, is only a one-time renewable thing. What do you think about that extension in general? It sounds like CAA and Ryan did pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, no doubt. But, this isn't some totally just absurd or obscene over-the-top contract either, which I think is smart on Memphis's end, because you got to couch last year's success and this year's potential with the long-term picture. And he's done a really good job. Has he done an A-plus, like absolutely exemplary job overall? I wouldn't quite say that. So I think it's a fair deal for Ryan Silverfield. And, I think it gives him a chance to kind of stay here, even if he has some success next year. I mean, obviously, if they make the college football playoff, he's going to get some calls. But if Memphis is showing some good commitment to him like they are with this contract, then, maybe they get back to the drawing board next year, boost it up a little more, get him over $3 million, and, maybe that keeps him at Memphis down the line instead of him getting lured away by a Big 12 job or an ACC job or something like that. So I think it's a fair deal, and I think it's kind of sets Memphis up to potentially keep him without being just totally irresponsible like you see some schools these days with some of these extensions.
Yeah, who is the other team in the Group of Five this year that you look at outside of Memphis that could be that Group of Five representative in the 12-team playoff? Boise State with Malachi Nelson kind of makes sense if he pans out.
Yeah, that could be one. I mean, the Mountain West is usually a bit cannibalistic in the way that it goes down. I mean, Boise ends up winning the league, but they end up winning it with three losses a lot of the times, which is going to depress your metrics in those ratings. I mean, honestly, I think you got to look at Liberty and Jamie Chadwell again, even though they're in CUSA, which is not one of the two best Group of Five leagues. He is a coach, and that is a program that have it rolling. And so, I mean, they, to me, would be an obvious threat to sort of, and the schedule they play is more conducive to going undefeated, which, that's kind of what you're looking at in all likelihood. You could come out of the AAC with a loss, maybe two losses, and compete with an undefeated CUSA team for that spot. But I don't know. Undefeated really seems to lure the college football selection committee when they're deciphering what to do with these teams down the stretch. That was absolutely the case this past year when Liberty ended up in the Fiesta Bowl and then got crushed by Oregon. But they were undefeated, and that stands out when you're trying to parse the resumes of teams that you probably haven't watched a whole lot.
I mean, if Memphis wants to leave no doubt, it has to be 11-1, right? I mean, that if they wanted to leave no doubt, we're getting into the college football playoff, you can afford one loss against Florida State. The rest of your schedule you have to beat.
Yeah, that's probably true. Two losses with a conference championship game victory, might get you there. It depends. It's just so difficult when you're talking about 50-plus teams competing for one spot. And so it's the Mountain West, it's the AAC, and then we'll see kind of what the Sun Belt comes up with as well. I mean, that's a league that's had some success in recent years. Louisiana, Coastal, App State, now, James Madison. Of course, Coastal lost Chadwell. James Madison lost Kurt Cignetti. App State's probably your best bet there. They've been a little down as of late, though. So, I don't know, it'll be interesting. I love the fact that there's a spotlight now in the Group of Five and the fact that there's a path to the playoff for these schools, because it makes every game in those leagues a little bit more interesting.
The AAC hired Tim Pernetti as their new commissioner after this academic year when Mike Oresko is going to go off into the sunset. What do you know about him? What do we need to know about him? Anything?
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about him other than you know, I don't think he's going to be out there banging the Power Six drum.
he's not going to be as loud as Mike was. He's not going to write strongly worded letters to the NCAA every year.
Yeah, I would think there's some other ways for him to direct his strategic energy. But no, I mean, we'll see. He's got a tough task on his hands, and being a Group of Five commissioner right now is not for the faint of heart.
Right.
You're looking at a rapidly changing hierarchy in this landscape to where, you know, you got to kind of fight for your relevance and fight for your seat at the table. And so, I mean, if he was the Rutgers AD, he knows all about that sort of mindset, you know, and that's sort of a program that's lived on the fringes of college sports for a while. And, you know, obviously being in the Big Ten, he was insulated from some of that, but he knows what it's like to be an underdog. So I guess you give him that.
Yeah, I'll miss Mike Oresko at least a tad bit. I know other people, you know, may not feel that way, but I thought he did good by the American for the most part. By the end and some of the decisions and the schools that he ended up bringing in, that was tough. But that was facilitated by the fact that he couldn't keep the good schools in the conference, because as soon as anyone in this conference gets any type of, you know, look from a Power Five, Power Four, whatever the hell, however many power conferences we have now, as soon as they get a look from one of those conferences, they leave. Like, there was nothing he could really do about the disintegration of this league.
No, you know, I think you got to go back to the very beginning, kind of, and you look at some of the issues that the league had out of the gates, and I think that's kind of more where things went wrong, if they did at all, because, you know, you struggled to keep UConn in the league. And,
right.
You know, what could the American have been basketball-wise if Wichita State and Memphis and UConn had all been up?
Right.
Simultaneously, and what could that have done for the brand and the visibility of the league? I think it could have done a lot, but those programs were struggling at the time, and that wasn't the commissioner's fault.
Right.
But I think you look at the collection of teams that was there, and the fact that none of them were able to get it going simultaneously, really at the same time, and so that was, to me, the biggest thing with the AAC sort of struggling to gain a foothold as a power conference. And yeah, I mean, once you get that call, I mean, Memphis would do the same thing. I
100%.
Mean, the Big 12 or the ACC, it would be deuces. It would be, you know, see you guys later. And so, you know, that's a tough place for a commissioner to be in. And, you know, Pernetti's kind of got to navigate those same waters here, because the realignment wheels, they aren't done churning just yet, I don't think. So, you know, he's got a task ahead of him.
And even with Mike, like the addition of Rice and North Texas, like some of those schools I didn't like. I thought his worst decision was his last one, though. Right? And maybe that wasn't just him. Maybe that was chancellors and presidents and everybody in the conference stepping up and saying it was a good decision. But Army as a football school in 2024 was the worst decision, I think, that was made. But we'll see how it ages, right? I just don't. I do not see that aging well at all.
I guess the thought process is it's a national brand. I mean, that's the only defense.
I mean,
of it,
sure,
that,
right? But
it's a national brand for 1 week a year.
The armies, the navies, the air forces of the world. Maybe Air Force a little bit less, but they're just going to struggle going forward. No NIL money. Like the transfer portal, these guys can hop out and go if they have other options on the table or offers on the table. I just don't see any of those schools, the academy schools, doing very well going forward. It just doesn't seem like a realistic proposition.
It goes all the way down to the SoCon, too. I mean, you go and look at VMI and the Citadel
right
now. I mean, not that they were ever historic powers, but they're going through it worse than they ever have in the NIL era, because they don't really get a lot of transfers. That's just not the way their institutions are built. But they lose transfers, and they don't, you know, they're not going to have a collective to lean on in any respect. So, I mean, I think the brand of Army and the brand of Navy is more, you know, it's stronger than a Citadel or a VMI, but they are still going to struggle, just like every private school is kind of in this era. But that national brand, that national visibility, sort of having that Army-Navy association with your league, even if that's not a league game.
It's still not a league game, though, which is just... Wow. Weird contract that was written up.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, the AAC is what it is. If Memphis can find a way out of it, that'll be great. But there's a chance here with this league on this next season to dominate it in football. And you got to take advantage of that. You kind of got to flex a little bit. And, you see it over the years where individual teams get to a place of dominance in these lower tier conferences that elevates their brand nationally. Of course, Boise State's never been able to escape that group of five level, but they've been the most visible brand in the Mountain West for a while. And then you look at Coastal Carolina and the run that they had, right? Like Memphis could get on one of those runs, you know, and then it's not all bad because you're really associated with being one of the very best at your level. And there's some advantage in that. There's some advantage in that over the alternative, which is going to hypothetically the ACC or the Big 12 and having to go through a period of time where you're nothing more than a punching bag. And you ask the fans, yeah, they'd love to get that notoriety of being in a better league. But at the end of the day, winning games is a whole lot more fun than being the team that everybody else beats up on. And that's what you get when you move up in college sports. You're the team that everybody beats up on, with Houston basketball being the lone ridiculous exception to that. But still, that's generally what history tells us about those schools that do get the call from the big boy league.
Now, last quick thing, by Monday night, who is the national champion?
Yeah, man, I'm going with UConn. First back-to-back champion since Florida did it in 06 and 07. You know, I watched the UConn-Illinois game and it was just floored with UConn's all-around execution in that game.
They only made three threes the entire game, too.
Yeah, ridiculous. And then you got Klingon, the one guy in college basketball who I think can frustrate or match up with Zach Edey. So that's how I see it going down, UConn over Purdue.
Yes, sir. Well, David, I appreciate it, man. We'll see what happens on Monday, but we'll catch up soon.
All right. Sounds good, Gabe. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. That is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X.